everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, why geoengineering activities should be included in the equation of anthropogenic climate change that is warming and destroying the planet. For decades, those who had viewed planes in the air dispersing chemicals, we were told that's not true. You're delusional. You're a conspiracy theorist. The government denied it. Industry denied it. The airlines denied it. And the vast majority of the scientific and medical community denied it. The only problem was, it was true. They were lying. Now, possibly they misspoke because they were simply unaware. But the government doesn't talk out of unawareness. It talks out of intent. It intended to deceive us. So think now of all the times that whistleblowers, investigative journalists, told us the truth and we weren't willing to hear it. What does that say about us? An example for all of us who protested in the Vietnam War. No matter how they construct their domino theory of how if we didn't bring down Ho Chi Minh and the Viet Cong, then it would cause a rippling effect across the entire Pacific and leading to the West Coast. That was the argument. It was not a feasible argument. Just like bombing the Japanese with Nagasaki in Hiroshima, it was unnecessary. Dwight Eisenhower said it was unnecessary. Head of the fleet said it was unnecessary. Leading generals said it was unnecessary. But those in power convinced the president it was necessary. He never apologized for it. And yet history shows he was wrong. The Vietnam War, it was a conspiracy. It was a false flag. Powerful people needed us to be there. As a result, they lied. Now, these are people considered the best and brightest. The best and brightest because they went to Ivy League schools more often than not, and they knew each other, and they came from that elitist, classist group that always could do what they wanted, and they were not just trust babies, but their parents were extremely influential. They were policymakers, like George Bush Sr. and his father, and Prescott Bush. And these people were part of the controlling oligarchy, yet no one wanted to believe it. Think how many times we were told over the decades that much of our problems that we face today, many of them at least, were due to the bankers. Now, that's a broad accusation. In and of itself, is not supportable. But then when you suggest that the Federal Reserve and its associated regional banks, the 12 regional banks, had conspired to manipulate artificially the interest rates, supposedly to maintain the inflationary rate, and yet there were times when the interest rate was 22%. And all those farmers, over a million farmers in the United States, went broke. Not one of them was saved. The establishment didn't care about the farmers. People committed suicide. They had had farms for over 100 years, many. And now it was just too expensive. They couldn't get a 22% return on their crops. And yet no one cared in power. So what we began to understand, at least those of us who were intentionally looking for the truth and were willing to accept it for whatever it was so we could then make appropriate decisions what to do to challenge it, we saw that almost every single major governmental action involved a cabal of individuals meeting in private, keeping their intents, their motivations, and the outcome secret. We were told we were bringing peace and freedom and democracy to the world. Remember George Bush? Remember Dick Cheney? They conspired to bring down Saddam Hussein. But they were going to do that prior to 9/11. Leslie Clark, who was a former general heading NATO, told us that he found out that they were going to take down seven countries. Six of those seven countries they've actually taken down. they tried to take down, would have succeeded taking down Syria, and their ultimate objective was Iran. This was all about controlling the energy and resources and the geopolitical stratagem in that area. Yet no one would listen, and not a single newspaper would publish the truth, not the New York Times. And yet they had some very bright reporters working there. Everywhere we look for the truth officially, it wasn't there. When they told us there were weapons of mass destruction, the consequences of that lie, and it was a lie, perpetrated by Dick Cheney, Colin Powell, and Donald Rumsfeld, and the others, with George Bush, Condoleezza Rice, Paul Wolfowitz, there were about 30 of them in the inner circle, representing both the Cheney faction of the neocons in Washington and the Bush faction of the neocons. Two groups of neocons joined together to perpetrate one of the greatest frauds in history. As a result, more than 1 million people have died. Most are women and children. And they have not done anything except create disaster, catastrophe everywhere they go. There's only one major rogue nation in the world. That's the United States. We work with other terrorist nations, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Kuwait, and we support dictatorships. We've only supported dictatorships. You can't name me a country that we support. Try it. I defy you. Give me a country that we have supported a populist movement, redistribution of land and resources, and bring it back so that there's a pro-environmental, pro-union, pro-humanistic movement where we don't take political prisoners, we don't oppress people, and we do not allow the wealthiest in the country to control the resources of the body politic. Name me the country. I've done my homework. I can name you 71 countries that we participate in genocide and or suppression of human rights. And yet we keep saying how remarkable we were. Every time I would hear Bill O'Reilly say, we're remarkable. What a fool. What a fraud on this issue. We're not remarkable. And the American people have lost their sense of remarkability because they become so gullible. And when you become that gullible, when you're smart enough to look for the truth and you refuse to accept it, even when the truth is blatantly in front of you and you're given that truth and you reject it, then what is your motive? So only about 10% of the American population are capable of even being honest with the world we live in and the circumstances we're faced with. From global warming, we're not changing anything. Anything. The three major nations creating global warming, China, number one, the United States, number two, and India, number three, are changing nothing. Not their economic model, not their environmental model, and throwing in a few little token efforts with some solar here or there, wind here or there. At the same time, they're building mega cities, massive industrialization, commercial farming, no one stopping their travel. And then one day you realize 53% of all global warming is from three countries, and we're the three countries who refuse to change. And yet we go forward thinking we're going to benefit the world. We're benefiting no one. So what's the likely outcome of this? And then in comes the people who shows that the banking system has been fraudulent, that they were manipulating currencies, the LIBOR interest rate, gold commodities, oil commodities, and silver commodities. They were giving us liar loans. They were giving people money who could not repay it, and they would have known that. So the entire banking community is a fraud. Yet not a single thing has changed it. The only thing that's changed is now there are more people who've taken out loans who are now sitting in debtors' prisons because of it. And these are private prisons. Do you hear the left crying out? Do you hear the right crying out? Do you hear the media crying out? In fact, Dane was a former employee of Bechtel Power Corporation and worked on the first commercial solar plants in the United States. So he is a legitimate climate researcher. He has studied geoengineering technology and operations for 15 years. And he is an author on the subject. In fact, he was in the documentary, Michael Murphy's documentary, Why in the World Are They Spraying? And he actually hosts a weekly radio broadcast, Global Alert News, every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. And his website is geoengineeringwatch.org. So he begins to interview the experts, and he reads the scientific literature, and he finds it's not a conspiracy theory that they're altering the weather. They've actually gone so far as to weaponize it. So even if they say now, today, for the first time admitting that this is real, and all those planes were carrying chemical dispersants to put particulate matter into the atmosphere, supposedly to block the sun's rays from hitting the Earth and continuing its global warming, but they've been doing this before global warming was even an issue. So what is their agenda? I remember back in October 15th, 1989, I presented the first article on the topic. It was a cover story for a national magazine, and it was about secret testing, about how different governmental agencies working with corporate America was testing biological agents on American citizens. And all the documentation was there. Now, a person could read that, look at the documentation, and say, wow, I didn't know this. Or someone could read it and say, wow, what does this tell us about the ethics underlying these governmental agents and the people who know about this? What does it tell us? Well, the world didn't change because of the article. They rarely do. But at least those who wanted to become aware are and have been. Let's say hello to Dane Whittington now. He's out there to give us his story. Nice to have you with us, Dane.
Thank you very much, Gary, for laying the groundwork, all the related issues that actually connect very directly to climate engineering, those behind it, the sort of morality or lack of it in the equation, the involvement of the Middle East, if you will, in the, if I could give one example, General Wesley Clark and naming the countries he named 1 week after 9/11 as being targets, and we consider the fact that every one of those countries has underwent a once-in-1,000-year drought, which destabilized those countries and helped them to be toppled. All of this directly related to climate engineering. So everything you have outlined so articulately plugs completely into this equation. And for those that have tried to convince themselves that our government wouldn't do this without our knowledge or consent, how many examples do we need, some of which you outlined, of what they do because they can, because we've allowed them to?
Okay, I'm going to give you a question and take whatever time you need, uninterrupted, to address it. And that is, I would like to focus on a single issue to begin. There is already increasing agreement that climate change is real, and humans are now the primary causal factor for global warming. All over the world, people are experiencing strange weather and acknowledging that climate change today is no longer normal. Even in the United States, which has the largest faction of climate change denialism among developed nations, this denialism is waning. We can all agree that our global dependency on fossil fuels is one major contributor for what is now called anthropogenic global warming, which simply means that human activity is a primary driver of the changes we are experiencing. However, humanity, and especially the United States, is engaged in many other activities that are contributing to the climate changes we are witnessing, and the most important one is geoengineering and weather modification. Those who accept that geoengineering is now a reality and taking place daily, primarily by spraying the atmosphere with metal and chemicals, particulates, to dim the sun's rays, mostly see these efforts as an attempt to cool the climate. And these sprays are highly toxic. But for the vast majority of the popular climate movement and environmental organizations fighting against corporations and industry and government agencies responsible for the most greenhouse gas emissions, geoengineering is either not discussed at all, or it is left out of the equation intentionally. So as with most modern technologies that are intended to generate a positive result, there's a negative technological blowback as well. And your recent lecture and visual presentation that you released on New Year's Day explains this in comprehensive detail. Seemingly, geoengineering may be triggered by its own positive feedback loops that are contributing to warming and not just cooling. So much of geoengineering tries to cool parts of the atmosphere, and this is only a temporary band-aid. And to keep this scam going, we will need to continue spraying for a long time, probably indefinitely. So here's the issue. What are we discovering about geoengineering that should convince us that this program and its technology is also part of the equation of human activities increasing global warming? And also, why is there such resistance by the environmental movement, by environmental activists, by climate change experts, to include geoengineering as part of the anthropogenic changes being felt now? Everything related to fossil fuels is mentioned, such as meat industry and ocean acidification and rapid die-off of insects and fish and animals, but I never hear a word about geoengineering. So why is that? And you mentioned that Leslie Clark mentioned the countries that we were going to go after, and Syria had its worst drought in its history exactly at that time. So here is the harbinger. Is it possible that Syria was targeted because it was considered the breadbasket of the Middle East? It was the greatest producer of wheat and hence bread products. As part of this regime change, without military conflict, by starving the people, and by starving the people, creating a mass exodus from the farms, which actually happened, into the cities, overwhelming the social services, the capacity of the cities and the government to feed these people, and then fomenting riots to have the people unseat their elected leaders, in this case, Assad. The form is yours. Take your time.
Let me back into a few issues from the beginning. First, with geoengineeringwatch.org, we fully acknowledge all sources of anthropogenic damage to the climate. We are not negating other sources of damage. We are simply saying this: there can be no legitimate discussion of the climate and the state of the climate and the collapse of the climate without first and foremost including intentional climate intervention operations, i.e. geoengineering. In regard to why the environmental groups and organizations refuse to address this issue, because their 501c3 nonprofits depend on them not addressing this issue, and they know it. And I'm not speculating or guessing. We have a legal team. We're suing the Canadian government. We're suing the U.S. Department of Commerce right now to get our Freedom of Information Act requests released. The Department of Commerce is the overseeing agency for NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So our attorneys have spoken to the attorneys from major environmental groups. All those groups that people have heard of, WWF, Greenpeace, Earth Justice, and so forth. And what the conversation behind the scenes is that they simply don't want to risk their 501c3s. My response would be, if keeping your 501c3 involves ignoring mathematically the single most destructive factor with the climate and the environment today, then what good is that environmental group? I have to ask that question. And we've sent information to, again, the progressive media and other sources. Not yours. You addressed this head on, and I have the utmost respect for you, Gary, but other sources are not addressing this head on for the same reasons. In regard to the military-industrial complex, when we know that top U.S. military leaders have stated for many years the greatest national security threat of all is the collapsing climate, why would we believe, why would anyone believe that they're going to ask our permission before intervening in the climate when, as you correctly stated, the acts we know they have carried out in the past, blowing up pristine South Sea islands, detonating nuclear bombs within the continental U.S., which we have statistical data now that indicates the fallout from the bombs detonated in the continental U.S., eventually caused a mortality in the U.S. of up to 450,000, and people seem to not want to remember that. In regard to the negative effects of climate engineering, as you correctly stated, is a temporary toxic band-aid that, in fact, does far more harm than good, like many of the so-called pharmaceutical cures for the human body that claim to treat a certain symptom while making the overall organism far less healthy. Same with climate engineering. So they can create temporary, highly toxic cool-downs, and a process called chemical ice nucleation for weather modification, this is a patented process, is one of the primary means which they can create engineered cool-downs. You need a lot of water for this. We know how much rain has been falling in certain parts of the country and the weather whiplash that results. We saw, we're expecting to see temperatures in Nashville, Tennessee later this week in the mid-70s, and they're projected to drop 40-plus degrees the next day. That kind of weather whiplash we see now commonly because as they chemically nucleate the moisture, it creates a cold, dense layer of air that settles to a few hundred feet on the ground, lowers the temperatures, creates the illusion of winter on a planet that's in total meltdown. Overall effects of climate engineering. Destroying the ozone layer, single greatest causal factor. Your listeners can look this up. They just need to simply search geoengineering is destroying the ozone layer. They'll find lots of data, not just from us. And by the way, if you're searching anything from geoengineering.org, Gary, might be good to use the Bing search engine or DuckDuckGo, anything other than Google, because Google has done their best to delete all of our information in spite of our rankings. It should put us at the top of the first page on a search for geoengineering. So I would recommend other search engines, but search geoengineering is destroying the ozone layer. Geoengineering is disrupting the hydrological cycle, the rain cycle, creating droughts and extreme flooding. Now, the drought creation, you named some of the primary locations, but we also have locations like Spain, Portugal, the western end of Europe. Same with California and the Pacific Northwest. And we know this is a 2+2 equation in regard to the drought-causing scenario or factors here. We can see on satellite imagery the constant grid pattern aerosol spraying going on in the eastern Pacific, the eastern Atlantic. There is no question this is the primary disruption of the hydrological cycle, contamination of the entire planet. There's no question. We have precipitation tests from all over the globe. The amount of these toxic metals coming down in our precipitation is off the scale. Now, for our test in the western U.S., for example, because many want to claim this is all coming from China, we have CARB studies, California Air Resource Board studies for California, that proves metals like aluminum are not migrating from China. Therefore, there must be a local source of those metals, and that source is climate engineering. Aluminum is the primary element named in climate engineering patents. Why? Because aluminum has a high reflectivity, a high albedo, and a very low coagulation rate, which means the particles don't come together, therefore they stay aloft longer. The properties are desirable for the climate engineers as long as you're not concerned about the consequences. So, again, negative factors of climate engineering: disrupting the hydrological cycle, destroying the ozone layer, toxifying the entire planet, creating more dry lightning because these particles are electrically conductive and you have less atmospheric RH relative humidity, so we have more dry lightning, i.e. more fires. And these materials are incendiaries. They coat everything on the forest floor, adding an incendiary dust to the equation. So we have, again, the environmental groups not willing to address this issue in particular, which is, mathematically speaking, the single greatest threat we collectively face short of nuclear cataclysm. That is the epitome of hypocrisy. And I can only hope that people in some of these groups find their courage, understand that hiding from this issue won't save us, and I hope they have the courage to address it with the directness and the articulateness with which you are addressing this, Gary. And I am so grateful for your voice in this equation. So grateful.
Thank you, Dane. As with perhaps every issue in current events in the media today, there's a lot of fake information, mythologies, conspiracy ideas, and even plain nonsense spewed from both the mainstream media and on the internet, but also governmental agencies. We actually know that the Pentagon has an enormous workforce paid for by American tax dollars to create propaganda campaigns. Are there certain climate change narratives, related to geoengineering or not, that are especially wrong and deceitful and that we should be made aware of so to ignore them?
There are many. In fact, there are agencies whose purpose, I would argue, it is to cover the tracks of the climate engineers. whose purpose it is to explain away the completely unnatural and engineered as being a natural phenomenon. Agencies like the Weather Channel, owned by Blackstone, Bain Capital, Climate Corp, purchased by Monsanto for nearly $1 billion. These types of agencies, again, who seem to be tasked with covering the tracks of the climate engineers, the same with so-called official agencies that are all reading from the same script. Let's look at who does the actual weather modeling for National Weather Service and NOAA, the two agencies I mentioned already that have an illegal federal gag order on them. Raytheon does all the weather modeling. Raytheon is a primary climate engineering contractor, holds many climate engineering patents. So they are literally producing and passing down the line a script that is read by all. Our FOIAs that we have produced already from our legal action against the Department of Commerce to get our FOIAs from NOAA states clearly and concisely that they are literally, this script is being passed down all the way to the local meteorologist level because they are more interested, those at the top, i.e. eventually Raytheon, are more interested in consistency as compared to accuracy. So when we have a meteorologist, and this is an example from Northern California, ABC top meteorologist, that will state here it's going to be mostly sunny 5 or 6 days into the future. And on that, quote, mostly sunny day, there's not a natural cloud in the sky. It's only jet spray dispersions, which, by the way, for your listeners, so they understand the degree to which these dispersions are blocking the sun. My home is on the cover of the world's largest renewable energy magazine. I have a very large solar system, about 15 kilowatts. There are days when I lose 60, 70, even 80% of my solar power uptake. That is a massive decline from what the aircraft are dispersing. This is not condensation. It cannot be condensation. It can only be a particulate, a very reflective particulate, and that's what climate engineering, a.k.a. solar radiation management, is, the intent to block some of the sun's incoming thermal radiation, but at what cost? At what cost? Trapping more heat than it deflects and everything else I've already outlined. So we have massive, massive disinformation campaigns, if you will, coming from private entities that are owned by the power structure ultimately and governmental agencies who all seem more concerned, Gary, about protecting their paychecks and pension than they do about protecting the planet on which their lives and their children's lives depend. And that paradigm must change, or we are done. In the near-term horizon, we are done. If there's one leap we can take in the right direction, and I recognize the magnitude of what's unfolding with the damage we have done to the planet from all sources, but if there's a single leap, the greatest leap we could take in the right direction to expose and halt the intentional climate intervention programs, I would argue mathematically, scientifically, that is the single greatest leap we could take in the right direction.
Good. We looked at the archives of weather modification news going as far back as 1880. So we have known about this for over 100 years. In the early days, when a contrail was mentioned in the news, people assumed that it included chemicals because weather modification to create rain was a huge business for entrepreneurs. That was before the term chemtrail appeared. What is the politics national agenda behind distinguishing these two words, contrail, C-O-N-T-R-A-I-L, and chemtrail, C-H-E-M-T-R-A-I-L, and how has it been used to confuse the public?
First, the whole contrail narrative, I would argue, is perhaps one of the greatest deceptions ever perpetrated on populations around the globe. All military tankers and all commercial aircraft have a high-bypass turbofan jet engine. It's a jet-powered fan. 85 to 90% of the air that passes through that engine is non-combusted. We have atmospheric RH, atmospheric relative humidity, is going down, not up. That cannot happen on a warming planet without a factor we are not being told about. That factor is climate engineering. These desiccant particles that absorb and accrete all available atmospheric moisture. That's why there's not dew in so many locations. They are drying out the atmosphere. Why are they doing that? Because they perceive the water vapor, which is also a greenhouse gas, as you well know, Gary, but their myopic tunnel vision back to the pharmaceutical industrial approach to the planet, which is literally genetically engineering the planet, and their myopic vision, they're trying to reduce atmospheric RH back to the contrail false narrative. The conditions that could produce, under certain circumstances, a short-lived contrail behind certain types of jet engines, those conditions are becoming less and less conducive by the day. The upper troposphere is getting warmer, humidity is going lower, the fuel efficiency of these engines, because they're jet-powered fans with very little combusted air moving through them, also extremely non-conducive to producing any condensation trail. So the condensation trail narrative, absolute lie. Should never see a condensation trail between a high bypass turbofan jet engine, except under very rare and extreme circumstances. Back to the semantics, the chemtrail term. Geoengineeringwatch.org has always, from day one, recommended an understanding of how important semantics are. The chemtrail term, although descriptive, is highly undermining to the credibility of the cause. It has become the instant buzzword of marginalization with any agency. They pull out their chemtrail fact sheet. There is no scientific basis for the term. So if we are dealing with agencies, if we're dealing with media, it's important to stick to the science terms. Geoengineering, climate engineering, solar radiation management, stratospheric aerosol injection. So this is a game of semantics. We're playing chess. It's important to know the science terms. And one more mention, if I could. Gary, you've probably heard many people reference the massive trails left behind B-17 bombers in World War II, and many refer to that as somehow this is as a proof that this is just condensation in our skies. We found and recorded off military archives film footage of a B-17 in formation shutting off its dispersion in midair instantly like it had been cut with a knife. We have that's posted, the fact that's in my most recent presentation that we posted on January 1st. So that is proof that what we were seeing coming from that aircraft was not condensation. We know B-17s had water vapor injection systems on them. That's one potential factor, but it appears that beta testing for climate engineering was going on during World War II. We have a growing amount of evidence to corroborate this, and we have evidence to indicate clearly that climate engineering was fully deployed immediately after World War II. Thus, Gary, many might remember the leveling off of global temperatures that occurred between 1945 and 1975 that climate science community could not explain because they did not know about or weren't willing to admit to climate engineering operations. But after the negative effects began to manifest after 1975 and the temperatures began to go straight up again because this toxic sunshade was creating unimaginable consequences on the ground, we see the doubling down of climate engineering over and over. The more the consequences manifest, the more they double down. So is that not the definition of insanity? When what you're doing is clearly not working, just doing more of it, and that's what we see happen.
For those of you who've just joined us, I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. My guest is Dane, D-A-N-E, Wigington, W-I-G-I-N-G-T-O-N. He is on Skype from up in Mount Shasta region of California. The theme is why geoengineering activity should be included in the equation of anthropogenic climate change that is warming and destroying the planet. We're going to use the second part of our program today to go into greater detail. And I want to start with the satellite preparation for rolling out G5, its relationship to geoengineering, which no one has made that connection, you have, and weather engineering seems to have two main uses, mitigating global warming and for weather warfare. Where do these two converge, and how are they different? Does one not, let's say, adversely affect or possibly affect the other?
I would argue they cannot be separated, and I would argue that any form of climate engineering, by its very nature, is a form of weather warfare, and also a form of biological warfare due to the toxic elements being used. The radio frequency microwave transmissions are used to manipulate these electrically conductive particulates in the atmosphere. They're used to repel those particulates, scatter them in the widest possible area. The radio frequency microwave transmissions, because of that ability to repel the particulate-laden, saturated atmosphere, when you're moving the particulates, you're moving the air mass that the particulates are saturating. And we have captured, in the case of cyclones like Harvey, Irma, Maria. We have captured and recorded and posted at geoengineeringwatch.org the manipulation of those storms with radio frequency microwave transmission, the broadcasts, and the aerosol spraying. So we can speculate, Gary, about the agendas behind the manipulation. For example, parking Harvey in place and let it drop record rainfall. We can speculate as to the agendas, but the fact that that event involved climate engineering is absolutely beyond speculation. We have, again, captured the animations of these transmissions going on, and these transmissions are coming from multiple sources. There's an entire grid in the U.S. called the NEXRAD grid, and if I would encourage people to look at the animations we have captured, because it would be much more clear how they knew, and let's take Harvey for an example, that Harvey, they knew nearly a week ahead of time that it was going to park in place and sit there pumping rainfall into the atmosphere for such an extended period of time. That rainfall that puts in the atmosphere also is utilized and seeded and dispersed as cloud cover. So we see massive swaths of rainless cloud cover in the outlying areas of this type of storm or moisture pump in the Pacific Northwest. When storms come across us, now California has not just been under drought for the last 5 or 6 years, it's been since 2007. This is a little bit of a complex scenario. I'll explain it very quickly, but it's imperative to weave this into the radio frequencies and the state of the Arctic, which is methane, which holds our future in balance too. But in 2007, when the Arctic ice began to crash, we saw a scenario put in place, the ridiculously resilient ridge of high pressure over the U.S. West. That is an ionosphere heater, i.e. radio frequency microwave transmission induced dome of high pressure spinning clockwise, which spins the moisture around California, which cuts off our moisture. That moisture is then chemically nucleated, which I brought up earlier in this broadcast, beginning to cool it down. As it spins clockwise around that pressure, it spins back down into the eastern half of the U.S., where it picks up more Gulf of Mexico moisture, chemically nucleated more. Thus, the eastern half of the lower 48, the most densely populated part of the U.S., is kept anomalously less warm than a planet that's in total meltdown, thus fueling the division and confusion of the population in regard to the true state of the climate. So that serves the climate engineers. So back to the 5G, back to the methane buildup in the atmosphere. Gary, you know that I think the number is 20,000 satellites are discussed being put up to facilitate the 5G. My question is this. Is this massive increase in the ability to saturate the atmosphere with radio frequency transmissions possibly a part of projects Lucy and Alamo? Those are two acronyms that can be looked up and researched. Those programs are designed, it's another layer of the geoengineering insanity. So as geoengineering has caused to fuel feedback loops, altering upper level wind currents, as I just explained, which then in turn alters ocean currents. We now have warm water pumping into the Arctic, thawing methane on the seafloor. Methane is migrating up the water column and then to the surface and then migrating into the higher levels of the atmosphere because methane is lighter than air. And in a desperate and unimaginably destructive attempt to degrade that methane, we have projects Lucy and Alamo, which is the attempt to microwave transmissions, back to your original question, to microwave as much of the atmosphere as possible in a desperate attempt to molecularly degrade that methane before the methane buildup turns our planet into Venus. And that's quite literally. So I'll stop there, but one can see the intricacy of this scenario and how so much weaves together.
Dane, let us deconstruct some of your argument. We all witnessed 19 trillion gallons of water coming out of Harvey over the Houston area. It stalled there for nearly a week, and it created 5 feet of water because it's all clay down there, so there's no place for the water to disperse. Massive flooding. The oil and chemicals that were stored frequently leaked out over a million gallons. The air was polluted. The water was polluted. People who were volunteering, generally just regular people in their small boats, ended up with skin diseases from the toxins in the water. and the soil is now permanently polluted, because when it did dissipate down and disperse, it left a whole thick coating of chemicals in the soil. Now, if you're a poor person living in that area and you had a garden, that garden is now toxic. The air is toxic. Your house is toxic. The wood in the house is toxic. It absorbed these chemicals. Not a single report on any of this in the mainstream media, nor any effort to help these people. Once the water went away, we were on to the next story, covering where the storm was going through Florida and the Carolinas and Mississippi and Louisiana. Can you further expand upon the resistance among environmental organizations such as Bill McKibben's 350.org and media such as Democracy Now for not covering or ignoring geoengineering? And I realize that since you don't know factually, you're going to be speculating, and that is subjective. But also, why should we believe what you're saying about geoengineering causing the stalling of this storm, when it could have just been the natural occurrence of the storm, the size of the storm, and the amount of temperature in the Gulf at that time causing it to stay there for what we were told by the experts was that period of time, and not dealing with geoengineering at all?
Let me start with your last question first. How can we prove that radio frequency microwave transmissions were what held that storm in place? My answer would be this. I would challenge people to search geoengineeringwatch.org, Hurricane Harvey. And probably better to do that again on the Bing search engine, because they're not censoring us like Google is. Watch the animations we captured in real time and decide for yourself why that storm was held in place. It is absolutely profound and essential to see these animations. These are real-time animations. We captured them with other storms as well. And back to the repelling nature of the transmissions as Harvey was trying to move on shore and thus weaken. It was literally held in place by these transmissions, and we can see the level of energizing of these transmissions as it maneuvers and manipulates that storm. You have to see this to believe it. So again, I would encourage your listeners to actually just search geoengineeringwatch.org, Hurricane Harvey. And with all of these subjects, Gary, we try to make our articles easy to search, you know, aside from the censorship. If you search geoengineeringwatch.org, geoengineering destroying the ozone layer, geoengineering creating drought, geoengineering creating wildfires, it's easy to find our data. Now, back to organizations like Bill McKibben's 350.org. They would not acknowledge, we've been unable to have anybody in that organization even discuss this issue. They're receiving money from the Rockefeller Foundation. Is that why? Do they know, Gary, I would ask, exactly how long their leash is? And they are afraid to hit the end of that leash lest they lose their funding from organizations like the Rockefeller Foundation. And I am an environmentalist to the absolute core. I would live in a teepee and eat acorns if I could live on a healthy planet. We will have a dead planet in the near term on the current course. So for these organizations in Democracy Now! And Amy Goodman, who I've met twice and who we've passed on data to directly, and who I know from people who work directly with Amy, that her position is, at least she's covering part of the truth. Amy receives money from the Ford Foundation. That's no secret. And it is our understanding from people who work with her that she is told not to discuss climate engineering or 9/11. Now, again, when I express my gratitude to you for the gloves-off, unvarnished, unspun, factual layout that you outlined at the beginning of this broadcast, I can't express how grateful I am, because for so many years I have dealt with this kind of censorship from the very groups, from the very individuals that claim to be championing and fighting for the planet, the environment, justice, and doing exactly the opposite, telling a half-truth and trying to convince themselves that a half-truth is better than no truth. I would argue with that. There's either the whole truth or there's something other than the truth. A boat doesn't float if it's mostly watertight. It sinks. And that's what a half-truth does. It sinks. So I have immense disdain for these organizations and the individuals in them, because they make their believers think that if it was true, they would tell them, and that is not the truth.
Okay, it still begs the issue, Dane, that we cannot, with any certainty or factual accuracy, ascribe motive simply because a foundation that is known to be associated by the CIA, the Ford Foundation, would in any way influence that unless you have firsthand information. It's just hearsay. So let us be careful of staying within what can be proven. And as someone who's published over 800 articles and have never had to correct a sentence in a single one with hard-hitting topics, in fact, my publisher was so concerned about being sued that he hired a Harvard Law graduate to work full-time of just reviewing my material, and I could not make a statement unless I had independent firsthand verification meeting this person's standards so that if there was a lawsuit, it could be dismissed because we had the evidence. And so I learned about what I felt was correct versus what this person said. Can you prove it by these standards? So if we cannot prove something, let us not ascribe something because it's not fair to the people being ascribed. Let us just stick with what is absolutely irrefutable, that if you took it into a court of law, you have a good chance of winning that. That's the standard. That said, for the remainder, would you agree with that?
I would. I want to reiterate.
All right.
In the case of Pepsi Now, I have passed on to their producers multiple data packages, including DVDs, never got any response from any of them about any of it. And any refused to discuss met her. So with face-to-face with her, she refused to discuss the issue. They refused to acknowledge any data they were given, no matter how credible and how verifiable, and I know that firsthand.
I do not doubt that, but we must also say that every day Richard Gale receives enormous amount of input, and we have discussions each week of what we're going to cover, and about 50% we do not take on because there is not substantial evidence, even if we believe that it is correct. We did a program on 9/11, and you have no idea the hoops that we made each of the people jump through as far as providing evidence, and we let them know. The moment you give us your opinion, that gets out. Only give us facts. So when all the programs I've done on 9/11, we have challenged the official report and deconstructed with experts why it could not be accurate. What we've never done, but so many other people have, is speculate what actually happened, who was behind it, what was their motives. I've never done a program on that for a simple reason. I don't have the evidence. I don't have the evidence that will withstand in a court of law. So we've got to be aware that you don't want to be discredited for something that you couldn't prove and you suspected because someone could say, well, I just didn't want to do it. And also, there are topics that I won't do because I don't feel that they're the most relevant topics. I've received information, but it's not a priority. You must also allow that Amy Goodman could legitimately say, I don't want to handle that topic, I'm not interested in it, or I don't believe it, and that's her right. And I disagree with Amy Goodman on so many things you have no idea, including her privatization of Democracy Now! And all the people who helped her in that effort, and yet the left nodded and walked away and allowed her to get away with that when they wouldn't have ever allowed someone on the right to do that. They'd have been all over that. But that's the hypocrisy. Also, I happen to know for a fact, because I've been contacted firsthand by a very important reporter, that one of the icons of the liberal community is about to take a day in the sunshine revealing information about that person's background. And I happen to know that person, so I gave my input. And yet it won't make a damn bit of difference. I absolutely believe that no matter what is said about some of these people, no matter what evidence is produced, it won't make a difference because they become ideologues from the left or the right. Now, with the time we have remaining, I would like for you to please go through and give us a beginner's understanding of geoengineering so that people can, not from a challenging point of view, but from a understandable point of view, why this is such an important topic, and can geoengineering be weaponized to the degree of, for example, some have claimed that some of the California fires that they'll show on the internet, and you don't know if it's real or photoshopped. You don't know how legitimate it is, where a whole suburb, some houses are burned, but none of the trees are burned. And some cars are melted because of the high heat, and yet there's houses left unchecked. Now, that could be a part of the natural phenomena that happens. I'm not that expert to say yes or no, but they're saying that that's what happened. And so tell us whether or not there's that capacity, even if it's not used, with geoengineering.
I'll quickly and concisely outline that. If I could back up on one point, I agree with you fully, and that's why we at geoengineeringwatch.org never try to speculate on the various agendas. For example, in the drought-causing effects, which relates to the fire question I'll get to in a moment, we do not try to speculate on agendas because we cannot know that. But we can from satellite imagery, from lab tests, and from other accumulated data, we can know that these programs are real, ongoing, and having particular effects like the drought-causing effects. In regard to Amy, I'm perhaps a little bit embittered in that I paid out of my own pocket over $12,000 to air Democracy Now! For several years on local access TV until there was a refusal to examine or even discuss data that was so completely relevant to any discussion on the climate that any discussion on the climate without that data was really illegitimate. So there is a bit of a history there. I don't disagree with anything you stated. We do have particular elements that can be proven. Satellite imagery, lab tests of contaminants that are not coming from Asia, which we have studies to prove. So we do have solid data, film footage. We try to stand on that alone. And again, that being said, I do agree with your points. Now back to the simplicity of climate engineering is the attempt to manipulate and control Earth's climate systems, stemming from the original recognition, going back to the 40s and even before, that the buildup of greenhouse gases on our planet would create a greenhouse effect that would become runaway at a certain point. They recognized this early on. They wanted weather as a weapon anyway. So I would argue that, again, there really can't be any distinguishing between geoengineering and weather warfare, because to manipulate the planet and the consequences it causes must be considered weather warfare. Whatever we're told as far as this being some sort of benevolent attempt, that couldn't be further from the truth. I would absolutely argue that point. This is about power and control, masking the severity of damage being done to the climate from the population, confusing the population on the true severity in order to keep business as usual till the last possible moment, and in order to try to use climate as a weapon, which, again, I would stress this is the crown jewel weapon of the power structure. As you correctly stated earlier with Syria, to be able to topple a country without the inhabitants of that country ever even knowing they were at war, by cutting off their precipitation, by eliminating their ability to feed themselves, and when those countries were named as targets before this ever even happened, we have a great deal of dots to connect. In regard to the fires, yet again, although geoengineeringwatch.org fully acknowledges all forms of anthropogenic damage to the planet, I lectured on anthropogenic global warming before I focused all on geoengineering because I felt it to be the superseding issue. In the case of the fires, we can attribute the majority of the causal scenarios to climate engineering. Again, we have satellite imagery to prove the grid pattern aerosol spraying in the eastern Pacific is cutting off the flow of moisture, is completely disintegrating the formation of low-pressure zones. We know that these particulates are incendiaries. We know they're falling on us because we have 70 lab tests in Northern California alone. Ozone layer destruction. We have a former NASA contract engineer working directly for us with equipment we supplied him. We are getting unimaginable amounts of UV radiation on the planet, including UVC, the last spectrum of UV radiation before X-ray. It is burning the trees from the top down, killing the trees. The cutoff of moisture is killing the trees. We know that these particulates I spoke of in the rain, specifically aluminum, we know the effects on the root system. We have a very good study to prove it. It causes them to cut off nutrient uptake, so the roots die from the bottoms up, so the bottoms of the trees, the root systems, are dying off just as quickly as the tops of the trees. More dry lightning. As I mentioned earlier, the electrically conducted particles with an atmosphere that is becoming anomalously dry in certain regions because of the factors I mentioned. We have more dry lightning. From every conceivable direction, climate engineering must be considered, in the case of the wildfires, the single greatest causal factor. Let me give one more example, Gary, from paleo data, the Pliocene epoch, 5.2 million years, western U.S. Was it burning to the ground when the carbon, atmospheric carbon was 25% higher than today? No, it wasn't burning to the ground. It was lush and wet. So we have, even though we have a buildup of greenhouse gases, we should have more precipitation, not less. We should have forests that are taking some of that precipitation, but they can't, or that buildup of greenhouse gas, but they can't because of all the factors I've mentioned. So again, in the case of the fires, and your listeners can search geoengineering.org, wildfires, for much more concise data. In the case of the wildfires, we must attribute geoengineering as the single greatest causal factor. In regard to the motives, we can't, other than some of the Middle Eastern countries, speculate too deeply on that. But the fact that climate engineering is at the core of the wildfire scenario, we can't acknowledge yet. In regard to the structure burnings, let me finish that off. We can say this, that we captured time-lapse footage of massive aerosol operations going on directly above the smoke canopy for the campfire. Unbelievable spraying operations right on top of that canopy. We can't know exactly what they were dispersing, but we know these materials are incendiaries. Is that a factor in those fires? In addition to everything I just named, how could it not be? So again, no legitimate discussion about the state of the climate without discussing climate engineering first and foremost, and no legitimate discussion about climate engineering without including engineered cool downs, chemical ice nucleation.
Dane, we're out of time. I want to thank you for sharing your insights. Dane Wigington, I'm Gary Nall, and this has been the Progressive Commentary Hour. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.